You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In early 2001, Jessica DeLong exchanged a dot-com job and a panoramic view of New York Harbor from her office in the Empire State Building for work as a maritime engineer in an office in the engine room of the historic fireboat, the John J. Harvey. And this time, her view was through a porthole pressed right against the waters of the Hudson. Now, she's written a book that details her experiences as one of the first female fireboat engineers and the critical importance of preserving New York's maritime history. It's called My River Chronicles, Rediscovering America on the Hudson. It's published by Free Press and brings Jessica DeLong to our show today. Hello.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me here.
How did you get involved with the John J. Harvey?
The best way to explain is that I stumbled aboard by blissful accident. I was working in the Empire State Building, and I had an invitation to go down for a volunteer day. And before long, I was on this boat. I'd never, hadn't spent any time on the water. And I was on this boat kneeling on top of this massive diesel engine cutting out used heating pipes. And I was totally hooked. It was just the realest thing I had done in months.
Did you have any prior experience with mechanics or boats? Because running and repairing a boat is pretty far removed from what you're doing as in your job as a web entrepreneur.
Very different, yeah. I grew up surrounded by mechanical things. My dad's a mechanic, an automobile mechanic, and so I learned a lot about the fascinating requirements for taking care of equipment and things like that. But I never had any hands-on experience, and I think that's that was the sort of magical thing that happened to me when I actually had a chance to be aboard the boat.
Well, there's no, I'm sure there are no manuals from the mid-19th century. When did this book, when was this boat made?
The boat was built in 1931.
Okay, well, still they didn't have anything, I'm sure, that you could refer to figure out what was going on and how the boat worked.
Yeah, no, I really relied on a hands-on apprenticeship of the sort that they don't, offer in many places these days. And the chief engineer at the time, Tim Ivory, was instrumental to my learning.
How long did the transition from volunteering on the boat to committing to actually working on it take?
It happened very quickly.
You just quit your job?
Well, I got laid off from my dot-com job. The company sort of imploded, and as dot-com companies want to do. Yes. And so that basically opened this magnificent door to me to be able to take on a more involved role, both volunteering. I continued to do volunteer time on the boat even after I took a position. And that really just opened the door to be able to spend the time to learn what I needed to do. To do the job.
You say the boat, the John J. Harvey, was built in 1930. What led the city to commission it?
Well, the boat is significant because it was the first internal combustion engine powered vessel to serve the fire department of New York City. Everything else up to that point had been steam powered, and so the boat was significant also in that in its original configuration, it was a gasoline-electric vessel, which when you think about taking a big boat full of gasoline to a fire, because this was a fireboat meant for putting out fires, that today that sounds completely absurd to us. But she was converted to diesel in the 50s and has her current configuration now.
Is it still owned by the fire department?
No, she was auctioned off for scrap in 1999. And interestingly enough, the papers actually changed hands for the new owners, the preservationists who basically stepped up and said, we want to save this boat. Those papers were actually signed on February 11th to the day, years after John Harvey was killed, the namesake for the boat. So,
On September 11th, it responded to an emergency call, even though it was not in any official way connected to the city.
Definitely. And, it was very clear that firefighting was not supposed to be a part of this new phase of John J. Harvey's life. And really, everyone, as everyone was caught in a difficult situation on those days. And so the boat was called back into service to serve the city, doing what she had been built to do.
And were you working on it at the time?
Yes, I came aboard on September 12th, and arriving and seeing the brass nozzles there pumping water actively, pumping Hudson River water to the firefighters on land. And many people, I didn't realize it until I started talking to people about it, but many people don't realize that Hudson River water was the only water available on site for several days after the collapse because the water mains had broken. And so here was this boat able to provide this service for which she had been built. And the reason why is because she was built at a time when principled craftsmanship was, you know, the guiding rule of the day.
We had to pump water pretty far. You had to pump it past the World Financial Center, didn't you?
Yes. And so really the fireboats, and it was the John J. Harvey, but also the New York City Marine Division boats, they were serving as sort of as suppliers of water. So it was all about unlimited water source. And what happened was there was a complex configuration of hoses attached to the boats and then actually connected to semi-destroyed, you know, burned-out pumpers, land-based units that could still serve some of their function to actually, you know, generate the pressure that was necessary.
Where is the boat docked when it's not motoring around the Hudson?
Now it's docked at Pier 66.
In Manhattan?
In Manhattan, yes.
Because as I understand it, most of the working docks are in Brooklyn these days or in New Jersey.
Yes, it's true. The face of Manhattan's waterfront has changed tremendously. And then that was one of the magical things about researching this book, was to be able to fill in the gaps because, you know, the shores of Manhattan used to be just absolutely alive and vibrant with working waterfront activity.
My brother's written a book about
yes.
the waterfront. It really has it's a sad loss. It's not all that long ago that most of those docks were visited by ships.
It's true, and it's a huge shift in time and over time. And one of the fascinating things for me is to pick up the story over the course of, you know, 400 years of Hudson River history, from the beginning, the first docks that were built along the shoreline, and then trace it all the way forward to the decline of shipping and the movement of commercial shipping to New Jersey shores. I also had occasion to go visit commercial shipping in New Jersey as well and get a taste of the modern way that goods are transported.
Does the public have access to the docks in Manhattan these days?
Some of the docks, yes.
What about the one where the John J. Harvey is?
Yes, that is that's really just a tremendous example of creative use of the waterfront that blends the tradition of workboats being on the water and also public access. It's a place, it's Pier 66 Maritime is the name of the pier, and it is a public access pier. There's a restaurant, there are bands, there are cultural activities, there are, you know, just any number of different events that happen in that space, and it's open to the public all the time.
And where is Pier 66?
It's at the foot of 26th Street on the west side, right on the Hudson River.
When it's working, where does the boat travel, and what does the boat do these days?
So today the boat operates as a living museum. So our job is basically to preserve the vessel and make sure that she has an ongoing life into the future. And as a part of that, it's important to teach people about this. You know, she's a one-of-a-kind vessel. There is no other boat like it. And to give people that visceral sense when they come on board, you know, they feel the rush of air through the deck guns before the water explodes out. And it's just this amazing way for people to get a very tangible sense of that kind of technology.
Doesn't it have five engines, each of them over 6 feet tall? Why so many and why so big?
Five engines. It's a diesel electric boat, and one of the really unique aspects of it is that it's a really redundant vessel. The engine room has a lot of different options for how to keep things running because it was an emergency services vehicle. It was, you know, a lot of people were relying on its continued operation, and so the five engines help maintain that redundancy.
I've always wondered about electricity on the water. I mean, we have a boat here, these engines operating with 625 volts of power at 1,000 amps. I would worry about the electricity and water meeting.
It's a valid concern.
This is a leaky boat, isn't it?
Well,
or a potentially leaky boat?
all boats are potentially leaky. That's just a really important thing for anyone, for everyone to realize. But, you know, the reality is that it's a really clear, raw sort of way to experience that kind of power. And, you know, obviously we don't allow anyone in the engine room when we're underway for that reason, but it is a tremendously valuable way to learn to respect this kind of equipment. Everything's not all, you know, behind a glass door like you might see in a plant for today.
My guest is Jessica DeLong, who is a United States Coast Guard licensed merchant marine officer. One of the world's only female fireboat engineers. She's written a book called My River Chronicles, Rediscovering America on the Hudson. It is published by Free Press. And you are the boat's engineer when it's underway. What does that entail?
Well, the day really starts when I walk down the stairs for the first time and everything is quiet. And the first thing I do is I fire up the 271, the auxiliary generator, and you know, my job is so tangible. It's there's such a difference between that fresh diesel huff that I get at the beginning of the day and the sort of stale diesel that greets me on the way down the stairs. And so that's, we get light at that point. You know, I've turned on the generator and now we have light. And then it's a matter of basically just taking care of all of the needs of each of the engines, you know, fuel, water, lube oil, all those things, and then getting things running. And it's a bell boat. So the way that works is that the pilot has no direct control over the propellers. So he signals down to the engine room, to our place at the control pedestal there, and actually tells us how fast he wants to go in which direction, and we actually make the change to the propellers.
But you can't communicate in any way other than through bells?
No, there's just
Can't you install an intercom system?
Potentially we could, I'm sure, but first off, it would destroy the magic. And second off, the reality is it's extremely loud down there. So I'm wearing double your hearing protection the whole time I'm down there. And the other thing is you would be surprised how much is communicated through those bells. I can tell very quickly who's at the helm. I can tell what's going on, whether they're bored or irritated or panicked or, you know, there's so much that's communicated with just a very simple technology. And it's basically a bicycle chain, essentially, that connects the engine room to the wheelhouse.
How can you tell that? The way they
yes.
beat the bells or whatever, they move the bells would indicate whether there is a certain amount of urgency involved?
It's true, yes. I mean, it communicates in how quickly, how rapid fire between commands, and then how strong the sound comes through. It's kind of hard to explain.
Much is made of the fact that you're a woman doing this. Is that something that you feel good about, or at this point are you kind of bored by that?
That's a good question. It's sort of a mixed bag. I mean, the first thing is that I've been incredibly privileged because on the fireboat John J. Harvey, I'm just crew. I mean, my gender is just a non-issue on board, and that is the reason that I had the space to do the learning that I needed to do to grow and take on this new, completely complicated field. So that's the first thing. And I have to say that it is really exciting to me that we have we do a bunch of kids' trips and bringing young boys and girls out on the boat and giving them the chance to see that a woman can have this kind of job. That makes me happy. I feel like we're going in a new direction in this country, and I feel like more and more there are going to be choices for girls growing up in terms of how they want to make their lives and you know what kind of work they want to do. And if I can help them see new options, that makes me happy.
Do you have any idea where the boat is on the river when you're on the controls? You write, you've garnered a subway stop knowledge of New York's waterways.
Yeah, that's the best way I could explain it.
Did you know you'd be below decks the whole time when you took the job?
Yeah, I mean, there was no question in my mind. I fell madly in love with that engine room, and I just wanted to be there and learn everything that I could. So that was never an issue. And then as the years passed and I realized, you know, like 5 years had gone by at a certain point and I'd never actually seen the Hudson River. And so I started reading books about it while I was down below. I'm basically technically in the water and, you know, between captain's commands, I would flip through history books to try to get a sense of what was going on in that river that I was actually in.
And you write that you've come to view the transformation of our country through a Hudson River lens. Well, we're talking about a river that was discovered, at least by Europeans, 400 years ago today, wasn't it?
Yes, yes.
Henry Hudson sailed up New York Harbor 400 years ago today?
Well, it depends on there are many interpretations, because the only thing that we have to go on in terms of the day-by-day is the first mate Jewett's diary. And so, well, it was more of a logbook, I should say. But yes, some people, and I personally am attached to the idea that on September 11th, Henry Hudson was in these waterways, and that, you know, for some reason that means something to me. But yes, he came and reported back to the European business folks that this was just a tremendously abundant and rich place, and really opened the door to globalization, to the concept that this was going to be a good place to set up shop.
But in the book, you also lament the loss of craftsmanship in America. This is a ship that was largely made by hand?
Yes, well, pretty much everything was handmade in this time, but certainly riveting. It's a riveted hull, and it's a very physical, very labor-intensive process. And the materials that were used, and the care and skill that goes into fitting plate, it's like this incredible 3D jigsaw puzzle. And this is technology that we don't know how to do this anymore. You know, I kind of liken it to the pyramids, you know, the fact that these things exist, and it's really hard to fathom how that happened. And I feel like, for me, the boat represents this age of craftsmanship that we really need to regain perspective on.
Is the boat open to the public?
Absolutely.
So could I or any of my listeners travel on it?
Yes. So we're at the tail end of our season now, but we do have free public trips and also do tours dockside. And the web address to get more information about that is www.fireboat.org. Pretty easy to remember that way.
And people can also visit your website at jessicadulong.com.
Yes.
Jessica Dulong, D-U-L-O-N-G, her book, My River Chronicles, Rediscovering America on the Hudson, is published by Free Press. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so very much. ¶¶